Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Incarceration is a subject we talk about all of the time here on Detroit Today. We talk about mass incarceration and its toll on communities. We talk about when it is right or moral for the government to step in and deny a person of all their basic freedoms because they have violated the covenants of law that keep us all safe. We talk about the policies and societal issues that lead to incarceration in the first place, and we talk about what happens when people come back to society after they have been imprisoned or jailed. The one thing we don't talk often enough about are the people who are not incarcerated, who are still disproportionately affected by the fact that other people are. I'm talking about family members and loved ones of those who go off to jail or prison. What does it do to a person and their family when they lose someone close to them, someone important to them, to prison? That's precisely the subject of a new memoir by my next guest. Ashley C. Ford's book, Somebody's Daughter, tells the story of a childhood defined by the looming absence of her incarcerated father. Ford is going to appear this weekend at the Midwest Literary Walk in Chelsea, Michigan, which is sponsored by the Chelsea District Library. She's going to appear this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. at the Chelsea First United Methodist Church. And Ashley C. Ford joins us now to talk about her memoir and this massive issue of incarceration in America. Ashley, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me. I love Detroit, and I'm so happy to be talking with you
today. Yeah, it's really great that you're here, and I'm really excited that you'll be at the Midwest Literary Walk in Chelsea, one of my favorite local events. Your father was incarcerated after being convicted of rape, and you write that he was guilty of that crime. So talk about who your father was and how your relationship with him and your feelings toward him have evolved over time.
You know, it's interesting because one of the central issues of my book is that I didn't know why my father was in prison until I was 14 years old, and he went to prison when I was around 6 months old. So I had no real concept of my father as a human being or as a person. I got these letters from him frequently, and I knew that there was somebody out there, my dad purportedly, who loved me and thought I was the best person in the world. And other than that, I didn't know anything else about him. And everything that I knew about him for most of those years was pieced together. So my feelings about him evolved from, like, you know, what was once a fantasy person, this lovely person out there who thought I was the best, and I didn't know why he wasn't around, but damn, I sure wished he was here, right? Mm-hmm. And then it became finding out what he had done and having that sort of not only shatter my perception of him, and definitely shatter that fantasy, but also make me question myself and what that meant about me, that this person made up half of my DNA. And this person thought I was an amazing person, but did that count if he was a terrible person or an evil person? And, you know, I go through that part, and I eventually get to a part where I begin to understand that having an understanding of my father as a human would allow me to understand myself as a human as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk about what his absence meant for you and for your family. We often talk about people who are incarcerated in terms of the crimes that they've committed and whether they deserve or don't deserve the sentence that they're getting. But in almost all cases, they are leaving behind a lot of people, and they are leaving behind families. And when we're talking about men being incarcerated, in many cases, we're talking about the primary earner in a family going away. So I wonder if you can talk about what life was like before and what it was like after he went away.
You know, my parents had me when they were 22 and 21 years old. Not even. My dad actually went to prison about 2 weeks before he turned 21. Mm-hmm. So he was still 20. And they were young kids. They hadn't known each other a long time. They'd known each other actually for only about a year. They got married when my mom was 5 months pregnant with me. They had dreams. They had goals. They started working. My mom became a student at the Indiana Business College. They really tried to do it right. They were trying to do everything according to the American dream. And then my father blindsided my mother, you know, with his actions. And that not only changed, obviously, our potential in our family for any kind of wealth building or any kind of sustainable financial situation, but it also emotionally traumatized my mother. I mean, imagine being a 22-year-old woman with a toddler, a one-year-old, not even, and your husband goes to prison for a heinous crime, an absolutely heinous crime that he confessed to and did commit. And while he's in prison, you find out that you are pregnant with his second child, with your second child. Mm. And you are now a single mother of two kids under two on your own by yourself at 22 years old. And the country at the time, you know, this was the Reagan era, is telling you that the worst thing you could do is ask for help because that would make you a welfare queen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what it was like.
Right. I mean, and I'm glad you talked about that in such specificity, because I think that's the part of this that's often hidden for people. They don't think of people who are headed off to prison as complete humans, right? They think of what they've done. They think of, maybe they even are thinking about the societal implications of that person going away. They don't always think of what are the circumstances of this person's life and how do they connect to other people and how will they affect other people when this person goes away.
I'm not sure that's correct. I want to say that that's the majority of people, but I find that when I have these conversations, there are quite a few people who defend the position that the suffering of the family and the children is part of the punishment for
My
the
goodness.
Incarcerated person. And they think it's okay because it's not their fault, right? They didn't do anything. Like, I didn't do anything wrong, you know? So why should my tax dollars or even my concern go toward people who I have no direct love or care for? And, of course, that leaves children of the incarcerated, loved ones of the incarcerated, feeling ashamed and isolated. And when we talk about the fact that kids and people who are related to people who have been incarcerated at times end up incarcerated themselves, you have to wonder if part of that equation isn't just the influence of the incarcerated parent. Is it not also the influence of the society who teaches the child of the incarcerated parent that they may as well be incarcerated too, that they may as well be a criminal as well?
I mean, that's such a menacing approach and dimension to this, that idea of people deserve this loss. People deserve this kind of this kind of punishment. That's just incredible. So you have spent a lot of time thinking about how to forgive your dad. And I think that's something that lots of people, of course, struggle with, right? People whose parents have done, you know, much, much lesser things than what your dad was convicted of doing. But but talk about how you even begin that process of forgiving this person.
I think that my process of forgiving my dad actually went a bit backwards in terms of how we usually think of forgiveness. I think often we think of forgiveness as sort of deciding that we're just not even going to think about this anymore. We're not going to talk about it. Where it's never going to come up again. I have decided to let it go and let it be. And however you have harmed me or someone else, I have decided to just forgive you for that. And now it's like it's gone. But that's not reality. And my concept of forgiveness has shifted into believing that it doesn't really have a whole lot to do with treating a person like they never did anything wrong, and has a lot more to do with me giving up on the idea that it was ever going to be different. I can't go back. My dad can't go back. I cannot hold on to the fantasies of a life that does not exist, a life where my dad never did what he did, a life where he was in my life, my entire life, present in my life, a life where my mother didn't have to live with the pressures of being the sole earner and the head of her household in such a way that it did not allow her to fully embody, know, or grow into herself. You know, those are all the things I want. And those are the things that I can't have. I can't go back and be a 14-year-old who is close with her mother and whose dad is in the next room. That's never going to be. I'm 35 now. You know, I have to give up on that. And to me, that is forgiveness. It is not deciding it's all okay. It's giving up on the fantasy version of my life and of our connection.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with athlete Ashley C. Ford. She is the author of the new memoir, Somebody's Daughter. She's going to appear at the Midwest Literary Walk this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. at the Chelsea First United Methodist Church in Chelsea, Michigan. We want to hear from you as well while we're talking with Ashley C. Ford. What, if anything, do you think we owe the families of people who are incarcerated? We especially want to hear from you if you have similar experiences yourself to what Ashley experienced, a parent being incarcerated. Also, call in and talk about how you deal with trauma or adversity from your own childhood. What does living with that trauma look like and mean to you as an adult? And how do you reach the point not just of being okay living with what happened, but maybe forgiving some of the people who were responsible? Is that possible? Is that necessary? Is that something you have struggled with in your life? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. I'm talking right now with Ashley C. Ford. She's author of the new memoir, Somebody's Daughter. And she will appear at the Midwest Literary Walk this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. At the Chelsea First United Methodist Church in Chelsea. We're talking about incarceration, the way that incarceration affects the people who are close to the person who goes off to jail or prison. That's the subject of Somebody's Daughter. It's also something that, of course, lots of us experience or deal with as children, especially here in the city of Detroit. We'd love to hear from you during this conversation as well. Call and tell us what you make of the way that we take care of or don't take care of the families of people who are incarcerated. We especially want to hear from you. If you've got these experiences yourself, tell us how you worked through them. Also, give us a sense of how you manage things like childhood trauma or adversity, how you face those things, how you come to terms with them as an adult, and how you even think about perhaps forgiving some of the people who create the conditions for your trauma or your adversity. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter and put comments there, and we can include you that way. Let's go to Courtney in Livonia. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. My father was convicted of attempted rape. It was actually before I was born and before he met my mother. And then, like Ms. Ford, I also did not find out about the reason for his imprisonment until I was in my teens. So I just wanted to say thank you for sharing the story, because you touched on the shame that you might feel or just what it means for you as a person. And I've felt that too. Most people don't know this about me because I've been ashamed about what it could mean about me as a person, if anything, especially someone who considers herself to be somewhat of a feminist. and so I just wanted to say thank you for sharing that and talking about that. And I can't wait to read your book. Thank you.
So, Courtney, before you go, mm-hmm. If I can ask a couple questions, how old are you?
Oh, I'm 39, okay. So very similar. Yeah. I actually found out from my mom, I think when I was a late teen, and she didn't give me a ton of details, but then once I became old enough, I Googled it, and I was able to find the details of what happened. I never talked about it with my dad. We didn't have that kind of relationship. He was also an alcoholic, but that's a long story. And then he died when I was 21. So, since then, it's just been complicated. Obviously, it wasn't a regular grieving process, but just, just trying to process that and what it means for the relationship I thought I had with my dad or the person that he was and who I am.
So the reason I asked that question mm-hmm. was because I tend to think that time is a really important factor in the way that we as adults deal with these things. And I think of time as a great ally, I think, in kind of coming to reckon with things or being able to manage things. And so I was curious about how much time you've had mm-hmm. already to deal with this and whether you anticipate that more time to kind of sit with it and think about it and maybe know more about it will make a difference. Do you feel like this is something you would be more comfortable talking about and being honest with people about as you get older?
That's a good question. I do think, just as I've gotten older personally, and this may be just my personal journey, but as you gain more life experience, you start to understand things in a bigger context or gain more confidence or whatever. So I do think that it is something that I could share with more people. I still just do go back to that I'm going to say it's an icky feeling of like, this was my dad, and that he did this to another woman, and how could that be? And then how could that be me, who is not that type of person? I think I could be more comfortable with it over time, just as I change and grow as a person.
Yeah. Courtney, I really appreciate you calling and sharing what clearly is a really difficult story. Ashley Ford, I want to give you a chance to react to what Courtney is saying here.
Well, first of all, I also want to thank Courtney for sharing that, because I got to tell you, kids of the incarcerated spend a lot of time thinking we're the only ones. And especially thinking that we are the only ones who are willing to talk about it. So when someone just mentions it, when they bring it up, when they share that information, I automatically know how much work it takes on the self to just be able to talk about it. So I appreciate her bravery and her courage for doing that. It makes me feel less alone. But I also just want to say, you know, time, I also believe that time helps things. I also believe that time will give you the opportunity to work on things. But I also know how hard it is to have that time unless you come from a certain socioeconomic background or move into a certain socioeconomic background. I have to tell you, I think I would be in a much worse place emotionally if I was still a day laborer of any kind. I don't know that I would have literally the physical energy to deal with the emotional processing that it takes to be honest about something like this. And that is hard work. Like, I think that part of the reason why people are so okay allowing children to suffer, allowing people to suffer through no fault of their own, is because we do think that, oh, well, eventually it'll just take a little time, but they'll be okay. And we're not thinking about what people lose in that amount of time, the kind of opportunities they lose, the relationships they can lose, why they're trying to heal and they're not in a good place. The money that you can lose on when you are trying to heal and not in a good place. So you know that you can't take that job that's super stressful but makes more money, because you know that the way your stress works, you just would lay in bed and not be able to get up after a certain amount of time. And that's not everybody, but it's a lot of people. And time alone does not cure or heal trauma. People need the opportunity to rest, and they need the opportunity to work on themselves. A big part of the reason why my relationships with my parents were so rough and so difficult and so broken, even my relationship with my mom, is because what mom of 3 to 4 children, you know, at a time, who has never made more than $40,000 a year, even though she works hard for the government and often works for overtime, when would that mom have any time to think about herself or her feelings? And when would she have time to teach that kind of thing to her children? Yeah. So I just think, yeah, there's a lot of shame. And we can't pretend that that shame just comes from the family or just comes from inside the individual. It's a societal shame. We shame people for being related to the incarcerated.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the fact that this is your first book. This is your debut book, and the vehicle here, the memoir, and that genre of writing. Not everybody goes to that form for their first book. Talk about why you did, and I guess what that does for you, in being able to tell that story.
Now, listen, I never wanted to write nonfiction. Never thought I would write a memoir. I very much come from the kind of family that's what happens in this house stays in this house. We don't talk about that. We don't tell our secrets. And I believed that. I thought that was the right thing to do. I thought being silent about the way people had harmed you or others or themselves was what you did when you loved somebody. I think a lot of families, a lot of people think that accountability is the opposite of love. They think that trying to hold someone accountable or allowing someone to be held accountable when you love them is the wrong thing to do, which is not the case. But that's how a lot of people see it. And I think that I just, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. I'm sorry. I think I lost my way.
No, that's okay.
I lost my place a little bit. can you say the question again?
I mean, the idea of this being your first book.
Yes. Okay.
There's something. It's certainly unusual, right?
It is.
But there's something about what that this form can accomplish for you. I think that.
Yes.
That really matters here.
Well, the book couldn't really live any other way. I did, like I said, I didn't want to write nonfiction. I tried to write it other ways. I tried to put it in fiction. For a while, I thought I would write a YA novel that had a lot of the same themes in it. And it just would not work. It wouldn't work that way. And I think it's because the motivation for writing my story is and always will be connection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to connect with people who get it. I'm trying to connect with people who can hear it. I'm trying to connect with people who need to hear it. And I just couldn't stop thinking about how much it would have meant to me as a kid who spent all her extra time in libraries for the most part, what it would have meant to me to find a book where someone was telling this story with their name on it. And with their face on it. And they weren't standing in the middle of that story in a place of shame. They were standing in the middle of that story from a place of self-trust and empowerment. What that would have done for me as a young person is, in my mind, immeasurable. And the opportunity to do that for somebody else, anybody else, that's a dream come true. So I think I wrote my dream book. I wrote the book that I desperately, desperately wanted to read or find on a library shelf when I was a child.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, Ashley C. Ford, we're really looking forward to you being at the Midwest Literary Walk this weekend. But especially, I want to thank you for joining us on Detroit Today and talking about this really wonderful memoir that you've written. Thanks so much for being with us.
This has been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk to an expert on how to electrify our grid and our energy sources. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.